Accession number 27070, Reel 2.
Douglas Gerard, Reel 2. So tell me about your gin palace, your radio.
The gin palace was a rather comfortable vehicle to be with, because it was like a van, and the was fitted out with a radio, and it had a roof rack, so you could stow all your kit on the roof rack and have plenty of room inside to operate, so that it was rather convenient piece of equipment to be on. But I unfortunately wasn't with it for very long, because when we got back to the wire, we started to reorganise and went back up the desert again to resume the conflict. At that stage, we thought the Germans had made a big advance, but they too had second thoughts and withdrew way back beyond Benghazi. And I can only presume that it was to shorten their lines of communication, so that they could resume the attack later on. So what then happened was that we were then equipped with some little German light tanks, the Stuart, which were also known as Honeys. So I was then in a honey tank with some friends of mine. Now, who were they? I could name them. There was the driver was Dabby Dash, lovely chap, died recently. The gunner was Don Hart. I may meet him tonight when I go to a reunion. And the tank commander was Captain Milvain, who is still alive and must be close on 90, who lived near Winchcombe. So we set off, although we were late in starting because we had to get the tank ready, and the regiment moved off without us, but we tore after them the next day and caught up with them, heading west like mad after Rommel's so-called retreat. And after a day or two going like mad across the desert, my tank developed a transmission fault. So this was reported, and it was decided that we should be towed by a tank transporter, but still advancing. So we were towed by this Scammel, I think it was, equipped by the RAOC, and off we went, towed behind this Scammel, but unable to keep up with the regiment because we were much slower. So the regiment moved on and left us struggling on behind. Eventually, the enemy caught up with us. There were just a few vehicles with us. And the Scammel driver said, "We can't get away quick enough from these advancing enemy. We'll have to take off the tow and go under your own steam." So we took off the tow and we went under our own steam as fast as we could behind this Scammel, who was trying to get away from the enemy. And the transmission broke, so we could not move at all. So then we had the orders to bail out and get on the Scammel to get away, which we did, left the tank. I think I switched on the radio to run down the battery before I left, and we got on the Scammel, and away we went. It was then that the regiment somewhere else did have a battle with the enemy, and another squadron leader was killed, and one or two other casualties. But eventually, we managed to get together somewhere near Massus. And it was there that we got some more honey tanks, General Stewart's. What we did with them, I don't know, but we were static for a while and subject to intermittent air attack by the Germans. And then we must have given up the tanks to somebody else. All sorts of funny things were going on in the desert. We gave up these tanks, and I was then, with one or two others, sent to what was known as LOB, left out of battle. And LOB at that time was in a wadi, and we were on our own, just a group of us stuck in this wadi. And a little further along the wadi, there were a group of German prisoners of war. So while we're in this wadi, we said, well, it would be nice to have a brew up. So I said, well, I know where there's some water. And I took a couple of chaps and a petrol can, and I cut a length of old telephone wire, took it along to this, what appeared to be an old Roman bath in the desert, a rectangular affair with a lot of water in it, but a lot of other things floating in the water as well. But we let the petrol tank down into the water on the end of the telephone wire and walked back with 4 gallons of water back to the lads in the wadi, where we brewed up and had a cup of tea. We thought we had been left abandoned, but we hadn't. They eventually came along and picked us up and took us away, and we were back with the regiment.
How many were there of you in the wadi?
Oh, about nine, shall we say, 8 or 9.
About the honey tank.
The honey tank was a very primitive tank. It had a turret which turned, but the floor of the tank didn't move as well. In other words, the turret itself was quite a separate unit from the rest of the tank, so that when you traverse the turret, winding a crank handle, you had to step over things on the floor of the tank to go with the turret wherever you were turning it. There was no power operated turret in the Stuart tanks of those days. It had a good little 37 millimeter anti tank gun and a very good machine gun, the Browning, which I preferred to the English machine gun. So. A very reliable engine, a rear engine thing, but it did use high-octane petrol, and like the other American tanks. Therefore, it was more liable to catch fire than the diesel-powered tanks of the Germans.
So you rejoined the squadron then?
So, having got over the mess up around Benghazi. In fact, it was probably beyond Benghazi, towards Adabi. I've forgotten the name of the place. But we did get way beyond Benghazi, chasing the Germans. Then it was decided to send us back and we would get re-equipped. So we went all the way back to Alex, to a place called Sidi Bish, near Alex, and there we were to be re-equipped eventually. But while I was there, I hadn't been there very long, I was sent on an intelligence course to Helwan, near Cairo.
That course entailed
learning about the formations of the German army units and all their equipment, and how to run and operate a regimental or brigade headquarters, and the paperwork involved, and so on. It was quite interesting, an interesting course, and I found none of it of use whatever when I got back to the unit.
Why was that? What have they got wrong, do you think?
Well, I didn't know. I didn't need to know the equipment of a German infantryman right down to the last button on his trousers, because that's the sort of thing I was learning. And in fact, at the end of the course, we had to get up and give a lecture on a certain subject that had been dealt with on the course. And my subject was, in fact, the equipment of a German infantryman. And I got up and I was able to list and talk about every item of equipment he'd got, from his arms and his ammunition to whatever. And I did that, and I got some good marks, and I was recommended as a brigade intelligence NCO. I said, no, divisional intelligence NCO. I said, I don't want to go to division. And they said, all right, brigade. And so I said, all right, brigade. I went back to the unit, of course, and as the intelligence corporal, and carried on with my wireless instructing and so on. That's right. So that was when I went back to Sidi Bish. No, I didn't. The regiment had moved to somewhere near Cairo. So I went to this place near Cairo, and they had been re-equipped with Crusader tanks and some big American Grant tanks, which had a 37mm gun in the turret and a big 75mm in a side turret. So that was F Squadron. Eventually, we went back up the desert on the railway tracks, on the railway flats, and the railway head this time had advanced a good deal beyond Mersa Matruh. So we were somewhere near Hellfire Pass, Saloon maybe, where we had to remove the tanks from the flats and go up the pass. I think we went up Saloon Pass. Hellfire Pass you come down, Saloon Pass we went up. So I was in a Crusader, and we got up Saloon Pass without any trouble. But when we got to the top, we were told to get the tank off the flat. It had to go down and help some of the others up the hill. So we were stuck up there for a little while until the Scammel, or whatever it was, had assisted with the getting the other tanks up the pass. From there, the regiment moved to some area to, I don't know what to do, but to rest maybe. And from then we went to close to the front line, where everything was quiet. The tanks had been disguised as lorries by fitting them with a frame and canvas over the top, so that when you had to go into action, you would split the frame at the top, cast off the two sides, and drive on as a tank. So there we were in the front line, disguised as lorries. And one morning, just as we were having breakfast, we got an alarm that there was the enemy about. Or they weren't sure whether it was enemy or whether it was one of the units of the CLY, the County of London Yeomanry. But when we heard explosions, it was decided it was the enemy. So we cast off the thing and hurriedly packed away our breakfast things, and we were in action. No time at all. And that was a very, very big tank battle. A tremendous tank battle. And not only were the tanks of both sides firing at each other, the artillery joined in, and there was armoured cars and machine gun fire, and you name it, it was all going off at the same time, and we were losing a lot of tanks.
What
I think
was it like being inside a Crusader tank in a
battle? Well, it wasn't too bad actually. I was the loader in the intelligence officer navigating officer's tank, And I was keeping an eye now and again through the periscope to see what was going on. And when I saw what was going on, I stopped looking because I felt safer by not seeing what was going on.
And what did you see going on?
Well, I could see, I saw an armoured car hit and turn over, and I saw our Grants ablaze nearby, and I saw other tanks stationary, and I saw tank crews running about who'd been from knocked out tanks, some of our men, and they were picked up, some were captured, some were picked up, and we withdrew because my commander got the signal from RHQ to march on a bearing of whatever. So he then got out of the tank, lined the tank up on the new bearing, and got back, and off we went on this new bearing, and the regiment followed us. So we got out of that mess and came stationary somewhere.
You had some quite severe losses.
Well, we lost a squadron of Grant tanks, nearly all of them anyway, and some of, I think, some of H Squadron tanks. But I was in RHQ at that time, so I wasn't affected. But I saw it all going on, and we moved out and had a rest. I think one of our tanks, for some reason or other, just caught fire, and it probably overheated and caught fire. And later that day, we had a few more skirmishes. And so it went on for a few days, a little bit here and a little bit there. And eventually they said, we're going to get a new lot of tanks. So took all our tanks. No, we left our tanks and went somewhere else and picked up a new set of tanks. And this time it was Stuart's and Grant's. No more Crusaders left. So we had Stuart's and Grant's, and we went back into the front line somewhere, and eventually they said, now we're going to advance, we're going to go so many miles south, so many miles west, and come up behind the enemy. I think this was the idea. So one morning off we set, we went so many miles south, and we hit the enemy, and they hit us. So there we were again in another big battle, losing a lot of tanks, and this time Colonel's tank was hit. He was killed, or severely wounded, and died. The adjutant was killed, the driver was killed, and the wireless operator was killed. No, the driver sustained a severe face injury, but he survived. So that three of the crew were killed. I was lucky again. I always am lucky. And we got out of that. And we went somewhere and had a bit of a rest, I suppose.
You weren't in the tank with the colonel?
Not this time. I was with the intelligence officer come navigator.
Yes.
Which was a very important tank.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the crew were... Yeah, the crew were okay.
Yeah.
So then we eventually... And we lost a lot of tanks. They took the tanks off us, apart from H Squadron. And they were sent off on what was known as the July Column. This was a column of a few tanks, a bit of artillery, and some armoured cars, with some maybe anti-tank guns and a bit of infantry. And they were to go out and harass the enemy wherever they could. So they set off on the July Column, and the rest of us moved back. As the Germans advanced, the further back we went, until I ended up near Alexandria. And the July Column was still floating around somewhere in the desert, but they were coming back as well. And I have in my... diary.
That's your diary from the time.
Yes, a diary that I went back to Alex, and on the next day, which must have been June the 20th, 5th, 1942, I went into Alexandria and I saw a film, which is a wonderful film, and I've seen it since on television, Moon Over Miami at the Rio Cinema with Betty Grable. A lovely film. And then afterwards, I went and had dinner at the Athenaeus in Galax. The next day, I went into Alex again and saw the film Hold That Ghost, it says here, and had dinner at the Le Petit Coin de France in Alex. And the third day, I went into Alex and I had dinner at the Grand Trianon. And the next day, they rushed us up to El Alamein. So that was the end of that. In a honeymoon. Yes, on the 28th, the Sunday, I was up at El Alamein. Now, at one time, going up to the front took several days. But El Alamein was only about 40 miles up the road, so we got there in about 2 hours, and we took over some honeys.
What did you see when you got there? What was?
At that time, it was a bit quiet, I think. There was some skirmishing going on. And eventually, of course, we took our honeys and we did a bit of... let me see. On the 29th of June, we advanced up the line, it says here. And on the Tuesday, there was moonlight strafing and AP bombs. And then on the Wednesday, July the 1st, we moved up a bit further and awaited orders. I think I was pretty well up at the front. But on the Friday, it says here, there was a battle from dusk to dark, and 350 prisoners and 35 guns were taken by the Freeburg boys, that's the New Zealanders. On the Saturday the 4th, we watched and we captured one or two prisoners, and one of my colleagues named Pavey was killed. My tank commander, Mr. Boyd, Captain Boyd, was hit in the forehead by a little bit of shrapnel, but not seriously, and I changed to the rear link tank, that's the tank operating back to division or brigade, and I did rear link to the brigade, and then we handed over the General Stewart, and I went. Now, what happened? It, for some reason, it was decided that we should hand over our Stuarts in exchange for some Crusaders from the 9th Lancers. So there it was. We went, contacted the 9th Lancers. They took our tanks and we took theirs, and I was then attached to the 9th Lancers. And it was while I was with the 9th Lancers that a tank commanded by Mr. Jeffries, Lieutenant Jeffries, captured a Mark II German tank.
Right. And can you tell me a little bit more about, this battle that you engaged in at Alamein?
Yes.
Engaged from
I'm coming... that one, I can't remember much about that.
Okay.
I know that we went out at night and we were firing the guns in the dark, so Lord knows what they were supposed to be doing. But we fired... I was loading the gun as fast as I could. I don't know what we were firing at. It might have been a diversion. but after getting the Crusaders from the 9th Lancers, I was chatting up at the front with a New Zealand OP, and he came out with the phrase, which is rather nice. He said, this is one of the outposts of the Empire. I don't think they would probably say that now, but I was back with Mr. Boyd, who had recovered from his slight wound, and we were shelled, and we shelled back. But I think we were sending more shells over than they were sending to us, so it was about 25 to 1. On the Wednesday, the 15th of July, we advanced up to the up to the line again, and this time we went through what had been regarded as a minefield, but they said it was a dummy minefield, so we tore across it out the other side and into the attack, and the tank got hit. It hit, a shell came through the front and it injured the commander and the gunner and the driver, but I escaped injury. I was lucky again.
This was in a Crusader.
The shell, the armour-piercing shell, had penetrated the thickest part of the hull and hit the compressed air bottle, which contained compressed air for power, for operating various things like the gear change and the clutch and the steering. Today, of course, it would be hydraulic with oil. But in those days, it was compressed air. So we'd lost all power. I didn't know that at the time. So we bailed out, and with the injured, we got into some Italian slit trenches that we'd overrun. And there, after being there a little while, sheltering from the shelling that was going on, Mr. Boyd said to me that he'd left something in the tank which was rather important, and for the life of me I can't remember what it was, but I said, okay, I'll go and get it. So I went back to the tank and I heard the engine running, so I got out of the tank and got into the driver's seat and operated the clutch and put it in gear and let in the clutch, and nothing happened. There was no power. The engine was running, but there was no power to control the tank. So I got out again and got into the turret and got onto the radio and told the squadron leader another great officer what had happened, and said, well, I'm going now. So I got out of the tank again and went back to join the others, and they'd been picked up. So I was on my own and quite happy, although every time I got out of the slit trench, the shells came down, so I don't know whether they could see me or not, but I got back. Eventually I got out and I went and I joined the regimental headquarters of the 9th Lancers, who accommodated me by putting me in a scout car, a dingo, I think, and for some reason we cruised around a bit, and eventually that night I found the squadron leader, the regiment again. Right. It was just one squadron that we had sent up from Sidi Bish. So I met the squadron leader, and he opened a bottle of whiskey and gave me a first drink.
Because you've been off on your own, haven't you?
Yes.
How did that feel? I mean, in a war zone, you know.
No, it didn't worry me. It didn't worry me.
You sound as though you were coping with all the sort of stress and the strain and the living conditions.
Oh, yes. It didn't worry me at all. No.
Were you well provided for, do you think? Or was it just that you were quite happy with the level of luxury that you had?
Well, being so close to Alexandria, our food supplies and water were very much better than when we were hundreds of miles up the desert. So I was then back in Sidi Bish. Yes, I ended up in Sidi Bish. And this time I was there for a while, and then I got dysentery and I was in hospital. And I went to hospital somewhere on the canal. Uh-huh. And
and how long were you there for?
I was there for 10 days. First of all, I was in hospital at Alexandria, and then they transferred me to a hospital down on the near the Suez Canal.
Right, okay. I'll stop you just there. Douglas Gerard, end of reel 2.